Good play, economists, and welcome to episode 114 of the Play Economics Podcast, where me personally, not Bobby, breaks down the business behind our favorite video games, your favorite video games, and provides you with financial context for industry trends. I'm your host, your one and only host for today, Matt Mascari. Me and Bobby are both traveling, and Bobby doesn't have time to jump on, and he's a bad host, so I am coming to you from Denver, Colorado, where I am having a lovely work vacation. And we're going to talk about video game news today. Let's get into it. So you're asking yourself, you're out here looking at the podcast and it's just me, it's just your boy, it's just Matt. And you're like, what happened to Bobby? Where is he? What's he doing? I know work's important, but he'll never, ever, ever miss the Playconomics podcast. Well, you'd be wrong. You'd be wrong. He did quit the podcast. Bobby is no longer with us. He said, Matt, Xbox is doing too well. PlayStation is doing absolute dog shit. And I can't be on this podcast because I can't look at the good viewers of the Playconomics podcast and adequately defend the position he takes on Sony with just how bad Sony has been doing over the last couple months. I'm just kidding. He's busy. He's doing some things. He's working on a couple projects. So you got me today. And what we're going to talk about first, right off the rip, is Ubisoft creeping back in to being a fantastic developer. We're seeing in their Q2 reports a 14% revenue bump. And you're thinking to yourself, Matt, Assassin's Creed Mirage. It's Ubisoft. It's Assassin's Creed. Is it a good game? Maybe. Are people going to buy it? 110%. That's what the revenue bump is for. And you'd be wrong. It's actually due to the Crew Motorfest. And I'm being 100% real with you. Quoted directly out of GameIndustries.biz. The Crew Motorsport was really the boost in that 14% revenue for the September sales, because it was really only Assassin's Creed Mirage pre-sales. But with the success of Assassin's Creed Mirage, we're looking at a good time for Ubisoft and Ubisoft games. Was it the best Assassin's Creed ever? No. Did it get people hyped about the franchise? Is it performing really well sales number wise? And is it doing decently critically? Yeah, I would consider Assassin's Creed a nice return to the classic format of Assassin's Creed while maintaining their view, maintaining the people that interacted with their platform during their transition away from the classic way that Assassin's Creed was produced. But just over the rest of the year, we have Assassin's Creed Nexus, which is a VR experience. We got Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, Just Dance 2024 edition. And in Q1 of 2024, we're going to see Skull and Bones. It is confirmed by Ubisoft for the 15th millionth time that it will not get delayed again. I think things are looking up for Ubisoft, and I think they're going to be on the come up for the next couple of years. And they're going to consistently put out projects after project. Are they A-plus projects? No. Are they solid C games that a lot of people like playing? Yeah. And listen, sometimes there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you just need to give a good game to people that are asking for a good game. We're going to transition into our next topic. This is going to be a rapid-fire episode. If you thought you were going to get a full long-form hour of me breaking down the business of video games while I'm in a hotel room in Denver, Colorado, you're wrong. You're going to get the quickest, the most elite strategic news. And in this piece, we are transitioning over to the success of Super Mario Wonder. And it is selling wonderfully. It is the fastest selling Super Mario title in the EU, and it's expected to break similar records in other countries shortly. It's been getting fantastic, full 90%, 90 or above on pretty much every critic. It's Metacritic scores in the 90s at this point. Overwhelming success from Super Mario Wonder. But I think the most interesting piece of this is that all of the articles, and this one specifically from Game Rant that I'm pulling this information from, Super Mario Wonder is kind of being considered the swan song on the Nintendo Switch. We've been hearing the rumors, we've been seeing the leaks of the Nintendo Switch 2. or whatever project they are working on after the Nintendo Switch. And they're thinking that this is the last big first party Nintendo game that we are going to get before the Switch transitions out. And I kind of agree, I kind of don't. Do I think this is the last major Mario game? And like I had said on the podcast a couple months ago, we are not going to get another 3D Mario game on the Switch. This is not that. This is a 2D Mario game. So I wasn't technically wrong. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of heavy hitters on the Switch for the rest of the Switch's life cycle. I do think that it's rumored to be coming out in 2024. I really, really don't think we see it until 25. At the earliest, at the absolute earliest, we're going to see it at the beginning of 2025. Holiday season 2024 is the absolute earliest that you can see it. You're going to see this console. What I really think is interesting, though, is should we be considering Super Mario Wonder to be the swan song? Because I really do think that we are going to get multiple Pokemon games between then and now. And I have a question for you, the viewer. What do you consider the backbone and the main titles of Nintendo? Do you consider the spin-offs, the Legends Arceus, the Pokemon, not necessarily the Pokemon Snaps, but the remakes, the Brilliant Diamond, the Shining Pearls, the Legends Arceus, the games like that? Do you consider those main, I guess they're tertiary products of Pokemon in general, but it's a major release. It's a Pokemon game. But to get back to my original question, viewers, what do you think is the most important franchise for Nintendo? Because a lot of people are going to come on here and say Mario, by far. I think that if you polled 100 people and you asked them what's Nintendo's biggest game and what's the biggest thing that comes out of it, it's going to be the Mario franchise. The issue is that Pokemon is just really good at printing money. So what do you think is the most important franchise for Nintendo? Is it Zelda? Is it Mario? Is it Pokemon? Let us know in the comments below. But with the Switch 2 potentially slated for end of 2024, 2025, we're seeing the end and the last few games come out for the Switch. We're going to see things up and running, hopefully with the Switch 2 by 2025, maybe late 2024. My question for you is, what do you think the Switch 2 is going to launch with? Is it going to be a new 3D Mario? Is it going to be a Mario Kart? Is it going to be Gen 10 Pokemon? They released Zelda very recently. They did Tears of the Kingdom earlier this year in May. They can't release another Zelda game. They're not going to have that be the launch pad like Breath of the Wild was for the original Switch. So what do we think is going to launch with Switch 2? We know we're going to get a holiday bundle for whatever the new Mario Kart is. But what are we going to see besides the Smash? That's obviously going to come out as soon as the Switch 2 is available. What do we think that we're going to see from the Switch 2 when we get it? I personally think that we're going to obviously see Mario Kart. I think it's going to launch with the reason I think it's going to launch in 2025 is I think that's the next big generation of Pokemon. And I think we're going to see that those launch titles kind of the launch of the Switch 2 in that Q2, Q3 of 2025. And I think it's going to coincide with a Pokemon. Excuse me. I also wanted to quickly address the leaks of what the new Switch is going to look like. And it looks eerily similar to a 3DS, so I do think that this is just an early model of the 3DS that got leaked. And I do not in any way, shape, or form think that this is what it's actually going to look like, but I figured we'd discuss it now anyway. So it's basically the dual screen. There's a new patent for that specific design that's going around that apparently got leaked from someone that's very close to Nintendo. I don't necessarily believe it, but I'm seeing it on the internet. And what I wanted to discuss is what exactly I want from Nintendo. Because this leak kind of confirms or leads us to believe that they're going and doubling down on the handheld market. And I don't want this from you, Nintendo. I don't want this from you. We need a dockable way to play this game. My entire childhood, all I wanted to do was play Pokemon on the TV. I wanted to see it. I wanted to hold the controller and I wanted to be playing this on the TV. Do not take this away from me, Nintendo. Do not take this away from me. The Switch was the perfect golden balance of being able to dock, play on the couch, relax, experience the game on the big screen. In combination with take your game on the go, hop on a plane, hop on a train, play in the passenger seat of a car, play wherever you want. Handheld game is on lock. You don't need a fully dedicated handheld experience to compete in this space, Nintendo. I just want a dock. I want to be able to play on the TV. Outside of the dock, the two main things that I want to see from this, the new Switch when it eventually comes back, is I need Xbox One graphics or better. I need 60 frames per second possibility. I need to be able to play games on a level that I'm comfortable with and the level that 2024, 2025 is comfortable with. You cannot give me the trees from the Pokemon games again. You can't do it. And to do that, you need to be better than Xbox One. You need to beat the previous generation of consoles. You're competing against the Series X and the PlayStation 5. You should be able to beat the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4. That's just my opinion. And we need better multiplayer. We really, really, really need better multiplayer from you, Nintendo. And if those two things are not in, if there's not significant improvements in the way that their graphics are presented, so we got Xbox One or better, and they have real support for online multiplayer games, I want no interest in the Switch 2, and I will not be buying it. And now, we are going to switch into our final topic, and a topic that I've wanted to cover for so long, but Bobby has been repressing my creative dream to discuss what's really going on at Sony. Over the last couple months, and this whole rest of the episode is going to be drafted on what the hell is going on at Sony and what can we take from Jim Ryan leaving, Connie Booth leaving, and basically a shakeup of some higher ups at Sony, what is going to happen with the PlayStation over the next couple years. The news cycle. We almost did an entire segment on just news cycle feed. We're going to transition it into something else, and you're going to see it on the next couple episodes of Playconomics, so stay tuned and be ready for a new segment that's coming on. You're going to love it. Xbox has absolutely been killing the news cycle for the better part of 2 years with this Activision Blizzard King acquisition and just everything that Xbox has been doing. They've been winning with Game Pass. Games as a service has never been stronger for the Xbox platform. And with this ABK acquisition, they've gotten everything. They've gotten all the pieces that they've put out. It's just time for them to start executing. And they have a good floor. They have a good attack plan for 2024 to execute and to deliver a monthly game to Game Pass while also giving really big, good first party names and things like Hellblade. Going to absolutely... 2024 is going to be a really good year for Xbox, at least media cycle wise. It's the best year that we have out of the big three planned so far. It's a better year than Nintendo's got, and it's a better year than Sony's got. With that being said, Sony has no games for 2024. Spider-Man has released. It's out. It's fantastic. It's great. If you have a PlayStation, you're into superhero games, I highly recommend you pick it up. I've heard nothing but good things. It's rating very high. Waiting for Bobby's full review. He should be closing in on the end of that game pretty soon. Waiting for a full review from him. But there is no reason why you shouldn't go out and play it if you have a PlayStation. But what else? What else do you have for me? There's literally nothing. I have seen nothing from Sony for the rest of 2023. And into 2024, 2025, and beyond. We've seen Wolverine, no release date. We've seen Helldivers for early Q1. It's a Halo knockoff. It's not what the Sony fans want. They want a big The Last of Us 3. They want new God of War. They want Horizon. They want additional content for the beloved IPs that they have. So where are they? The only news that we've really seen out of PlayStation are hardware expansions. So the PlayStation Portal, PlayStation 2 VR, random other hardware things, the headset or the headphones that they have, which look really cool, but I don't think I'm going to pick them up because I think they only work for Sony products. we haven't seen a lot of game news. We've seen Jim Ryan leave, Connie Booth leave. And you could only think that something is going on internally. And what I've been able to gather from different news sources, Twitter, is the theories that I'm seeing and the speculation that I've seen on the internet and Twitter is the best estimation that I'm going to be able to give you right now is that Sony was undergoing a culture change under Jim Ryan. And we saw it in the last showcase was that they were moving towards live service video games. From what I've read and from what I've seen, part of Jim Ryan leaving was that he was responsible for that transition to try to capture the live service market. And Connie Booth was kind of the last straw of that piece. And she was also in that minefield or in that field of let's go with live service games. She is also obviously left. And we saw their massive push for this. And I do think that the massive push for live service games did cost Jim Ryan and Connie Booth. But the question that I want to address now is why? Why did they go and why did they make such a strong push, a push that inevitably cost them their jobs? They left on a cushy package, I'm assuming. So wish them all the best. Can't wait to see them back in the video game industry soon. I'm sure they'll both be back on their feet and back working for very high profile developers very, very soon. Why? Why this switch to live service? And I've been on this soapbox for the better half of 2-3 years that we've been doing this podcast. Video games are more expensive and they take longer to develop. Sony's whole identity is around big budget, story-driven first-party games. And instead of being able to put one out every 2 to 5 years, now they could put them out every 7 to 10 years. Games are costing more money. They're taking more time to produce. They've had very marginal increases in price. We just saw the jump to $70. It leaves first-party developers in a bind because they need to cash flow and float these projects while they're in development, but they need short-term games. Sony's obviously best known for their first party, but those are the most expensive and most time-consuming to develop. So the entire game industry had to answer the question, how do we float first-party games while not being able to release them? They can't release a first-party game because it takes them so long to develop and a lot of money. So in between first-party games, they need to generate revenue. How do they do it? Xbox found their answer in the development to the development time question in games as a service, both in the form of live service games like Halo. You got Halo multiplayer, you have Elder Scrolls Online. They have a litany of live service games that they went into over the past 5 years. And they have Game Pass, the ultimate game as a service platform. It's you download it, you pay the monthly subscription, and you're in whatever games you want to get into that are on the library. It's a massive library, and it's a fantastic platform. Nintendo, on the other hand, has gone on to rely on remakes, and they've made some concessions in the quality of their product. So they get games out much faster than other developers while also relying on remakes to kind of generate interest over time. So they remake classic video games. The Thousand Year Door is coming out shortly. Pokemon gets a remake every couple of years for one of the previous generations. It's always going to happen. And Nintendo is able to float their big budget games like Zelda, like Mario, because one, they use less development time because they're developing, I don't want to say worse games, but the games that they're developing aren't as technically driven and they're simpler, in my opinion. It's just a stylistic choice that they made to make their games easier to produce, and it's a very shrewd operating way to make video games. Some people are not very happy with the performance of the video games. See, Scarlet and Violet is absolutely abysmal once you get to end game. It's an extreme case, but we see Nintendo's ability to deliver games very quickly. But we also know that the Switch is nowhere near as powerful as the Xbox Series X or the PlayStation 5. And because of that, their development time gets cut exponentially. Sony has been unable to answer this question. They have not been able to answer the question of what do we do in between our major first party development games. They tried to go into live service. It cost Jim Ryan and Connie Booth their job. And I think we're going to see them walk it back. I think we are very quickly going to see Sony decide that live service games isn't, we're not going to be able to do it. There's not enough video game real estate for live service games to continue to develop at this pace. And I think Sony's going to see that very quickly. And I think they're going to walk that back. So if they don't have live service games, they're not really that big into remakes. We've seen a lot of success with Resident Evil 4 remake, but I don't think a lot of their IP lend themselves really that well to remakes. And eventually you just get caught in a cycle where if you're taking you 10 years to put out a game, but you make a remake every 5 years, you run out of content very quickly. So I don't think remakes are the way that Sony's going to go either. What I do think, and it's something that Sony has historically been very good at, and they've done a fantastic job with the PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4 in this avenue, and I think they need to double down, triple down, 100% get back into this piece. And they did take a big hit with the ABK acquisition in this front, but I think Sony really needs to just dive in to third-party exclusivity. And I know you're going to sit on here and say, Matt, Bobby's not on the podcast, and you're going to start talking about how exclusivity is good for video games. Exclusivity has its place. But I think right now Sony's only option is that if they can't develop their first-party games fast enough, they don't want to use their first-party IP for live service that their developers don't want to make, they got to come up with something. And I think this is their best option. They've historically been fantastic at getting exclusive third-party games. We've seen their relationship with Square Enix. We've seen their relationship with From Software. We've seen their relationship with Capcom. They need to 100% dive into this, triple down, quadruple down, septuple down into this, and make sure that Sony is the premier place to play even third-party exclusives. Because I think right now Sony lives in that realm. The games that you experience through a PlayStation, you can only experience in that medium. And I think the only way to speed up their development time is either cut costs and make the projects happen faster, which dilutes the goodness of the game. The game will get worse by doing that. Or you need third parties in between, and they need those third-party deals. They need what they used to do with Call of Duty. They need a Bloodborne 2. They need Capcom to start releasing single games. They need Square Enix to continue their relationship, even though it seems like they're going to make a push to really get involved in Xbox and Microsoft. They're going to need those third-party subscriptions. And I feel bad saying it because I think the live service was a push and I think it was a mistake and I think it set them back a year and a half. And they have all this hardware that they're able to put their games on, but they have no games to share right now. So I think it's going to be a rough 2 years for Sony. But I think if they really dive in, the easiest short-term answer for them is to make massive third-party deals or purchase studios that have products out and products ready to ship and just start sending them out, start firing them out, start making PlayStation the place to play these third-party exclusives. But with that in mind, I want to thank you for watching the Playconomics Bad podcast. And don't forget, like this video, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so that you never miss a single solitary episode of Playconomics, because we never do. And remember, as always, happy gaming.